Good afternoon, Chair Fasano.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay, we're starting with an update on customer complaints. The complaints per 100,000 boardings were 2.92. There were 933 total complaints in July, which included both the directly operated and the contracted bus service. We've not displayed the rail complaints because they're insignificant compared to the bus numbers. The most common complaints continue to be schedule reliability, 24%, pass-ups, just short of 20%, and operator discourtesy, 16.3% related. On the operator assignment ratio, over the last few months, we worked to decrease the operator assignment ratio as we allowed bus operator FTEs to reduce through attrition in parallel with the reduction in the revenue service hours that was implemented in June. Now that we've reached that goal, we're working towards bringing the assignment ratio back close to the standard of 1.18. Displayed here is the assignment ratio for rail. There's really only one division that we ever have an issue with assignment ratio is the blue line. But basically they're in good shape overall on the rail side. Fare revenue operations year to date through June, we ended last fiscal year nearly $30 million less than our goal with a decrease in ridership. And although not reflected in this chart, we started the current year $600,000 less than our goal at $27,788,000. July average weekday boardings decreased over June by 5%. We found that during the summer months with schools out and vacation schedules, we typically experience a downward seasonal trend. Interestingly enough, that did not happen with the orange line, where the boardings remained constant over June and ended up 6% higher than the 12-month period prior. As with bus, July average weekday boardings for rail in total decreased, in the case of rail, by 6.2% to just over 306,000 average weekday. The total for bus and rail, the graph displays 10 years. And all the ridership levels for the past few years have declined in comparison to the high points in FY06 and 07. There has been an upward trend over the course of the past 10 years. We've reported previously that we've been working real hard on on-time performance, and for this last month it increased to 75.14%. It's been trending up for the last 9 months. Continue working to achieve a FY11 goal of 80%. The CEO has made it clear that that's still not good enough in terms of his experience, but given our experience over the last nine months, we've been satisfied that the actions we've been undertaking are starting to bear fruit. Okay. Safety accidents per 100,000 hub miles remain constant at 3.08. During the month, we had 252 collision-type accidents. And in analyzing the data, the most frequent type of accidents have been side swipes with another vehicle passing our vehicle, 14% of the total. Other vehicles involved with the bus in a standing zone, 14%. Collisions with a fixed object, 9%, and then cutting in by another vehicle, 6% of the total. As a means of focusing on accident reduction, the transportation team is creating safety enhancement training programs for the operators, along with a proposed public campaign for training our operators to include pedestrian safety, bicyclist safety, and a red light violation safety campaign. Fleet reliability on the bus side, mean miles between mechanical failures came in slightly under our target of 3,500 miles. Typically during the summer, we experience more road calls due to hot weather, but so far the year we haven't experienced the hot summer, as you're aware of. And then the weather aside, the maintenance teams continue working with the vehicle technology to resolve warranty, engine, and other related issues. And we've increased technical training to help the mechanics improve in their skill set. And these classes are being made available through a central instruction. For this next one, Cal State University Los Angeles, we've got John Roberts here to present.
The Vehicle Technology Group has been looking at a variety of options for future power for our vehicles. Cal State University Los Angeles and our staff met several months ago looking for some opportunities of joint partnership. One potential one that we're looking at is the opportunity for future zero-emission buses with hydrogen fuel. They'll be open a hydrogen facility in 2011, and it's just some long-range opportunities that we're looking at. We've also been looking at Foothill Transit has introduced a zero-emission all-electric bus. We attended an opening last month, and we were in San Diego yesterday, and they had a demonstration on it, so there was some interest there. We also have a partnership with the ISC Corporation, and we're in the process of converting one of our buses to an all-battery bus. So as we get closer to zero emissions, this is the process that we're looking at the most economical and appropriate technology that will prove itself out.
On the balance of these slides, Bruce Shelburne will provide the update.
Okay, good afternoon. The 2550 update, we do have 41 vehicles currently on the property here. We have 39 that have been conditionally accepted at this time. As you can see, there's 42,000 miles per week being operated. The accumulation is 2.23 million now, and there are various retrofits and upgrades currently underway. The Blue Line Traction Power Substation Replacement Program, the new Washington Traction Power Substation was commissioned, first one, August 21st, as per the plan. Right now, the Traction Power Substation over at Pico, next to Pico Station, is out of service, and it is being demolished. Should be ready to roll about mid-November. Take 4 years to get everything up to speed on that and replace everything. And we do have a few upcoming events that will be occurring here. Expo construction activities will take up September 24th through 26th weekend, as well as the October 1st through 3rd weekend, where we'll be bus bridging from Washington Station to 7th Metro Center. This weekend's work the grade crossing replacement at Anaheim has been postponed for a couple of reasons, but we'll be picking that up in October. Additionally, as far as expo work goes, we'll have, in addition to these two closures, another four closures before the end of November to deal with. So it's pretty much like an every other week or every 2 weeks in a row. As far as other upcoming events, we do have UCLA football at the Rose Bowl right now, so we do have a little bit of bump up in ridership going to and from games. And that's it.
Appreciate the report. A lot of good information there. Are there questions by members of the committee? I know we have a few questions, but I think we'll follow up offline on some of those. I know that there are a number of other items on the agenda today.
Thank you.
Appreciate the report. Let's move to the consent calendar.
Public comments.
Yes.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Walsh. We have to fight.
Come on, Mr.
We have to fight for your rights. We have to fight. I don't know where's writing it out. You have to shout out.
Oh, the figures are a little wrong on bus riders. Lower it by one. Of course, Mr. Jimenez was shot to death by a Mexican-American cop recently, and because Antonio is Mexican-American, he called him a hero. Well, I don't think fascists who are Mexican-American are heroes when they kill Guatemalans, okay? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the only one up here who's going to say that. Okay, let's talk about ridership. 1.8 million boardings bus boardings in 1985. A quarter of a cent, bus only, quarter of a century later, today, their latest figures, bus and rail together, 1.8 million. Despite the fact that we've spent $25 billion in tax sales, and despite the fact that the population of this county has grown by 1.5 million. Per capita, adjusted to population, the transit ridership in this county has gone down 25%. You'll see it nowhere except here.
Is that better?
Okay.
Item two is the overhaul of Metro Red Line heavy rail friction brake system equipment. What is the motion? Is there a second?
Yes.
Motion second to approve. Any discussion or objections? So ordered. Item three is the real-time NextBus information system that would tie in with our ATMS. A quick report here, and we do have a request to address the committee from Gerard Wright.
Nell Martinez.
Good afternoon. Al Martinez with Operations. Item three before you is a recommendation to award a contract to NextBus in the amount of $1,649,000, inclusive of 2 one-year options. The service contract will provide real-time bus arrival information to the public. The bus arrival information will be available to the public via web, cell phones for single message sending on for texting, and your smart mobile phones. The real-time prediction information will also be made available to third-party developers free of charge so that developers can be encouraged to implement new applications to further enhance our transit riders' experience. The data will be integrated into Metro's webpage and 511's regional website so that a common and coordinated approach can be provided to the public. Funding for this project will come from operating funds and will be included as part of our annual budget process. I'd be happy to address any questions you have.
So just as clarification, in some NextBus applications, they've actually put signage at the stations. This is really being more directed toward handheld devices in most cases.
The initial step is to get the predictive information out. We have existing infrastructure primarily on the rail side, and we will utilize those displays and get that information out as they move from rail system to our bus system. We will be back in the future as an overall program to establish additional display needs as we develop that program.
Okay, other questions by the committee? Mr. Wright?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a comment with the NextBus. I think the information is key and critical per the Blue Ribbon Committees as well as within our governance councils to get that information out to our patrons to if there is an arrival or if there's a delay of some sort. That information needs to be present to our patrons so they know and they can make adjustments and make the system more intuitive and make it more reliable and more user-friendly. And I think this is a key component to make that possible. As he mentioned, it could be integrated into further components and integrating the bus and the rail. So if you're riding on a subway, you can look at the monitor and say, okay, next bus are leaving this station, connecting to this location at such and such a time. This will make our system much more user-friendly and much more reliable for our patrons. So I definitely agree with this, and we need to get this going as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. What is the pleasure of the committee?
Move approval.
We have a motion second. Motion by Director Du Bois, second by Director Robinson. Any discussion or objections? The item is approved. That brings us to item four, which is a finding that bids received for lube trucks under Public Utilities Code Section 130-232 have been rejected, and the trucks may be purchased at a lower price on the open market. And that would be made finding according to Code 233. And item B would be to authorize the CEO to award a firm fixed price bid or contract under the invitation for bid listed under the report. This will go to the full board and require a two-thirds vote there. What is the pleasure of this committee?
Move it. Second.
Motion and second to approve. Any discussion or objections? So ordered. We move to item five, which is also a procurement-related item on the Metro Green Line Transit Passenger Information System, and there is an amendment to this report, or a revision, I should say. A quick report on this, and then we have requests from Mr. Walsh and Mr. Wright on this item to address the
committee. We have Dan Lindstrom and Michael Harris Gifford present to present.
Dan. Good afternoon, Board. This is Daniel Lindstrom, Manager of Wayside Communications. Before you is a request for a project to extend the transit passenger information system onto the blue and the green line. The system already exists on the red and is in construction on the gold line at this time. We will be using both funding from the Homeland Security, state Homeland Security funds, as well as Prop 1B funding. The current system was installed in 1995 and has become unmaintainable and is requiring large amounts of manpower to keep it running, and hence we're here to request this project to replace it.
That in terms of the revenue, at this point in time, it's not coming out of the gating project, is that correct?
What they are doing is moving some funding that was going to be expiring in March and moving it into my project, because we're not going into a new design. This is a project we already have. We can go out and procure the equipment quickly and then move the funding needs over into the upcoming years for the gating project. We're not eliminating any funding.
Questions by the committee before we hear from public comment?
I have none.
Mr. Walsh.
All by Mr. Wright.
This committee is China the girl, so.
John Walsh. Also twittering. Hollywood Dems. Just join up. This again, you know, some of us believe, everybody here, we know they're racist. But some people think that this board is only racist for minorities if they're on the bus. Now, in the old days, you understand what's going on here. It's the same people on the buses, the rail. There's hardly any white people on the train. What they're doing here is delaying the gating on the east side because they're brown people. They're getting the gatings on the expo line because that's the white people. Thanks to all groups. And I want to say the true hero here is in this room. And that's one of the finest Mexican-American activist I have ever met in my life. Ernestina is sitting right here. She's done a fantastic job. She organized alone. No professional paid organizers came here. And after this East Side Line was gotten, she got gates only because she fought for it.
Mr. Walsh, Mr. Wright.
Again, this is going to sound like a repeat of what I said for item three, but it's pretty much the same idea. And given the age of the blue line and the green line, those one-line messenger systems are getting pretty old and pretty unreliable because you can barely get the information printout that's needed. For example, for expo construction, any delays that might occur, this is something that the blue line and green line desperately needs for our patrons, and this is something that, again, can go to the further upgrading of, you know, showing the connectivity of buses and other such information that passengers need. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleasure of the committee on this item.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and second to approve the item. Any discussion or objections? So ordered. Item six is to authorize the CEO to award a 36-month indefinite delivery quantity firm fixed price contract to Jankovic Company for the provision of synthetic transmission oil for our fleet. Is there a motion by the committee, or do you want to hear a report?
Move approval. Second.
Motion and second to approve the item. Any discussion or objections? So ordered. We move to item 7. For a procurement for copying equipment with Canon Business Solutions, and also with Southern California Office Technologies, which is the highest rated proposer, for 1 year pilot test of print management services. So for these two items, 7A and 7B, do we have a request on these items to speak? Is there a motion?
I'll move it.
We have a motion by Director Robinson, second by Director O'Connor. Any discussion or objections? Item 7 is approved. Item 8 is the motion for LIFR project for new closed-circuit television monitoring for our bus divisions and putting them under an integrated system. Are there questions by members of the committee? No requests to address the board or the committee? Director O'Connor, is there a motion?
Move approval.
Motion second to approve item 8. Any discussion or objections? The item is approved. Item 9 is the recommendation to approve service changes to Tier 1 bus lines that are scheduled to be implemented in December of 2010. We have numerous requests to address this item. First, let's have a staff report.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Conan Chung, DEO Service Development. In terms of December 2010 service changes, there's really two components of the Tier 1 implementation. The first one is to better coordinate services to reduce duplication, and then the second one is to right-size Metro Rapid corridors to meet service warrants. Before I go into the specific details of the service changes, I wanted to talk a little bit about our public outreach. For this level of effort for December 2010, we did a significant amount of outreach. We held the 5 public hearings that we're obligated to do under federal law at each of the Governance Council meetings. And then we also distributed over 100,000 take ones on board vehicles and through different distribution centers. Something different that we did that we don't normally do, but we are going to continue to move forward with, is a grassroots public outreach campaign. And what we did was we went to 12 different locations, many of them at major transit hubs and stations, and we reached more than 1,000 patrons. And what we wanted to do is bring the show on the road and be able to talk to people who don't have the opportunity to come up to the public hearings themselves to make comments. We also surveyed passengers on board buses and at transfer locations, again, further giving people the ability to provide comment. We went to the divisions to talk to our bus operators to get firsthand information from them, since they're the people that are directly in contact with the patrons. And then we provided rider bulletins on Metro buses, and the information on the service changes were posted on Metro.net. Based on the outreach that we did, we received over 426 comments. And we also received a few petitions. One point to note is that the BRU actually submitted an additional petition that covered several line proposals. And although the petition was submitted in a timely fashion, it wasn't actually forwarded to my department until after we wrote the reports for the governance councils. So within the report, it was not included, but at the governance councils, it was made known that there was this petition, and the governance councils acted based on that knowledge. Based on the public comments, we actually went back and revised 5 of the 21 proposals to try to better reflect what the major issues were for the public. And we feel that these proposals that we are moving forward with address many of the significant issues. So with that, in terms of the first Tier 1 change, it's really talking about better coordination of services. If you look at this map, in terms of the current situation, the Gold Line East Side Extension is highlighted in yellow. The line 68 and the 770 on Cesar Chavez is highlighted in blue here. As you can see, the 287 is in close proximity to both of those corridors, and both of those corridors have service levels up to 5 to 7 minute frequencies during the peak hours and 12 to minute service during the base period. So there's a significant amount of service. Only within a quarter mile, you have the 287 that runs hourly service on Floral and First Street. So this proposal would be basically to eliminate that duplicative service on Floral and First Street on the 287, pull the 287 back to Montebello Town Center up here, and then we're going to extend the 68 line on Cesar Chavez from Atlantic to the Montebello Town Center to provide a one-seat ride from Boyle Heights to the town center there. The second component of the Tier 1 changes is really to right-size the Metro Rapid corridors. When we put in the Rapid program, really what we're trying to do is achieve faster speeds, and that really improves service for people who want to travel long distances. We do that by reducing the number of stops served and also through signal priority. The trade-off, though, is that we have to use some of the local services in order to change those into the Rapid services. So therefore, when we change the local to Rapid, we actually do lose some service at the local stops. And in addition to that, the difference in the speeds between the local service and the Rapid service results in inconsistent headways as you go down the line, because the Rapid actually catches up to the local. So what we did was we evaluated all of our Rapid corridors, and where we had corridors that did not have long travel distances and where we could not achieve the speed differential, it's actually a better service to the public by providing local service in those corridors and eliminating the Rapid service in those corridors. The proposals are on the right-hand side in the table, and essentially those proposals are put forward because of that situation.
It's basically discontinuing Rapid and then augmenting local service?
Exactly, augmenting local service or limited stop service to provide enough capacity. We do go through the Title VI compliance analysis for environmental justice. We went through that to take a look to see if there was a disproportionately adverse impact based upon ethnicity, household income, and limited English proficiency. And when there is a disproportionate impact, we need to make sure that there's alternative services or any sort of mitigation measures. The results are in your board report, and all disproportionate adverse impacts do have mitigation measures. So with the board approval, the service changes would be effective December 12, 2010, and we'll continue to provide additional outreach and public information to ensure that our passengers can easily transfer from one type of service to another type of service. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Questions by members of the committee? Okay, we have go ahead. Director Robinson.
I understand there have been some concerns from the community on at least one line. I know that I've been through this just recently before with the city, with the service bus lines for the city, and it's always a very difficult process no matter what you do. But I do commend the fact that you've done a tremendous amount of public outreach on this process to get to where we are now. However, I think line 260 has been a major source of concern for constituents within the city area regarding accessibility and the fact that the service was going to be completely cut, and there are other services available, but I thought maybe if we could look at some other alternatives for that line, and I think this has come out in some of the public hearings as well, but I wanted to see if there was some consideration of what could be done about that line, if anything.
Yeah, the 620 or the 260 is not part of the change, but the 620, which is the Boyle Heights shuttle, is part of the change. Okay, regarding the 620, what we can look at is reducing the frequency, so we can pull out some of the service, still maintain the service out there, probably at an hour frequency. As you mentioned, Director, there are a significant amount of services out in the Boyle Heights area, but keeping the bus out there every hour throughout the entire day allows some lifeline opportunities for people who do want to take the shuttle around. And perhaps we can do that for 6 months and come back and reevaluate it for the next shakeup.
I think that would be helpful to kind of ease some of the concerns and also to allow people to encourage people to take some of the other alternatives that are there that could perhaps get them to their destination. So if we could hear back on line 620, I've been looking at too many numbers today, look at that after the six-month period and be able to look at what the ridership has been and see how the service has been and see if that encouragement would help people be able to still get to a destination with the other service, that would be appreciated.
Okay.
Thank you. We have requests from the public to address the committee on this particular item. First, I would like to call forward Jose Rodriguez. Jose will be followed by Barbara Lott Holland, who will be followed by Kimberly Richards.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. This is what I'm going to discuss. First of all, the 439. They want to reduce that to stop going to LAX area. This is no duplication of any route. I know you have the Commuter Express, the 438, but the 438 only runs like 2 hours during the day on the PM to LAX, coming back in the morning, which is not really helpful for passengers, for employees from the airport and all that. So if you really want to get rid of the 439, first you need to talk to Commuter Express, LADOT, and have the 438 running all day. Also, we need the service to go to the mall, Fossil Mall. Now, the 620, we need the service. That is covering the hospital, and that's covering two Gold Line stations. Having that running every hour, it makes no sense. So we should just keep it the way it is. Now, the 920 and Wilshire, we need that service too. It's a rapid express, and it's completely different from the 720. The 720 is only a rapid. The 920 is a rapid express. So there is a difference. Thank you.
Barbara Lott Holland, followed by Kimberly Richards, followed by Ernestina Montellano.
Barbara Lott Holland, co-chair of the Bus Riders Union. I'm here today because the MTA staff is recommending the cutting of rapid service on line 753, 711, and 715 because they say it's lack of ridership. Ms. Robinson, I want to thank you for that input regarding the 620, but also I wanted to remind you as a new board member that the rapid program was part of the new service plan and is under the federal oversight until December, and yet MTA is already including them in the service cuts. These rapid buses represent a victory for those transit-dependent residents to get from the south side of town to the east, west, and north within a timely manner. We are asking that you recommend to the staff that they give these lines the resources that is needed and the ridership will improve. Waiting 30 minutes for a rapid bus is not rapid service. We're asking the MTA staff to market these lines the same way that they do for the rail service, and they will see an improvement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those of you who have read the staff report have probably noted that there was an additional line, 902, included in the service change program that's now been lined out. Because that directly impacts the Governance Council that I sit on, I wanted to give you some background. Line 902 has been operating as a demonstration project, and it unfortunately has not achieved the goals that it's been needed. And for that matter, the Governance Council was prepared to recommend a complete cancellation of the line. However, discussions have taken place, and staff now believes that they can move forward with a restructuring of service on the Van Nuys Boulevard corridor. And I would like to commend staff for taking that approach, by which method the 902 we are no longer opposed to continuing a stopgap measure. I would like to add one point, though, and it's a point of hypocrisy. The Bus Riders Union opposed Metro Rapid when it was first introduced. Now suddenly they are its champion.
Ernestina Montellano, followed by Lydia Avila Hernandez, followed by John Walsh.
I'm not going to say very much. Only one thing I'm going to say, I'm very disappointed that you're trying to take away the 620 from Boyle Heights. It's a necessity. We use it for the General Hospital, the White Memorial, to all the senior centers, to our shopping area in Cesar Chavez. Also, some of the students use it for the Roosevelt High School. This is a real necessary line. And, you know, our seniors can't walk from here to there. And what you're doing to us is you're going to cripple us worse than we already are. I think that you're being very, very heartless, and I hope that you don't cut the services out now or never, because this is really important to us. And I wish there was more seniors here to speak up. Some of them couldn't get a ride. Some of them couldn't be here because they're sick. And they use these services. We use it for everything. I use it to go to the hospital. So please, please, I plead. And remember that November is coming up, and we are going to be voting, and Jose Huizar and the mayor should start sticking up for us instead of being in the background. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lydia Avila, and I'm here on behalf of East LA Community Corporation and our over 800 members to urge you to keep the 620 bus line in operation. Our members collected over 450 letters of support from local residents, many of them who were unaware of the proposed changes, in order to preserve the 620 bus line. As you know, the 620 was once called the Boyle Heights Shuttle and has for years connected residents to over 40 community destinations like LA County USC, White Memorial Medical Center, and great organizations like ours. We have a stop right in front of our offices. Without requiring a transfer and weight that comes with the transfer. The Gold Line is a great asset to our neighborhood and the region, but unfortunately, its construction has led to a reduction and even the elimination of bus service that was most frequently used by Boyle Heights residents to commute within the neighborhood. The 620 bus line is the only line that connects northern, southern, eastern, and western Boyle Heights in one trip. For seniors, children, and disabled, this is of great significance. So I urge you to please think in a regional of us locally, not just in a regional context. And I have some maps here that highlight the 40 community destinations that the 620 reaches without requiring a transfer to another line. And here are the 450 letters.
Someone pick that up so we can get copies of that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Walsh, followed by Rosa Miranda, followed by Joanna Casper.
HollywoodHighlands.org, and besides Ernestina, another hero, unpaid organizer, Mr. Jose Aguilar. He fought the cemetery. He found the graves. I'm telling you, out there, we have a huge group of people that aren't being spoken to by mainline bus rider groups, and there is no outreach to these people. Is it because they're minorities? I don't know. But it's time for the outreach to these people, these leaders, who are unpaid. And I'd like to tell you right now, the Boyle Heights is a lifeline. Rail service is down, the earlier meeting. Rail service is down. You have not cut any rail. And I'd like to repeat what was said. This is a direct quote at the earlier meeting. Focus of the MTA agency will be on project delivery, not construction. We are now providing more service than we can afford. We will be interested in quality of service, not quantity of service. For shame! For shame, you racists!
Followed by Joanna Casper. May I ask for order in the room?
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Rosa Miranda y soy miembro del Sindicato de Pasajeros.
Good morning. My name is Rosa Miranda and I'm a member of the Bus Riders Union.
Ustedes como comité de operaciones deben de oponerse a las recomendaciones del personal en los recortes de servicio.
As the operations committee, you all should oppose the staff recommendations for service cuts.
Lo que necesitamos ahora son mejorías de servicio y ustedes pueden debatir y oponerse a los recortes de las líneas rápidas y la eliminación de estas líneas. Esto es dar un paso atrás en la lucha de los derechos civiles y lo ganado y protegido en el decreto mutuo del sindicato de pasajeros.
What bus riders need now desperately is an expansion and improved service in the bus system. You all have the ability to oppose and to debate these cuts to the rapid service and other lines. if you move forward with this proposal, it is a step backwards in the struggle for civil rights and will be taking away what was won by the bus riders union in the civil rights consent decree.
Yo he estado en los autobuses de estas líneas donde quieren eliminar y cómo quiere el personal que se suba la gente cuando pasa cada hora y en el sketcher no es no pasa el transporte cuando lo dice.
So I have been organizing daily in these lines that are being proposed to be cut. And the staff should know that these buses do not come when they are supposed to come. They come, don't come, on the hour that they're supposed to arrive.
Mucha de la gente que utiliza el 715 es gente trabajadora de hoteles en el aeropuerto y la eliminación de estas líneas va a perjudicar mucho sus vidas y por eso necesitamos que ustedes se opongan a estos recortes.
On the 715 organizing there, I've met many working class people who work in the hotels, work at the airport, and we need all of you to oppose these cuts because of the great impact that it will have on these working class people's lives.
Thank you.
Joanna Casper, followed by Michelle Lopez, who will be followed by Crystal McMillan.
Hi, my name is Joanna Gaspar, member of the Bus Riders Union. As a bus rider, I've organized on the bus, collecting signatures, and attended 3 out of 5 sector meetings that you guys had, and I've been spending time talking to bus riders about the proposed cuts. The reaction is always the same. Desperation, concern, anger, anguish, the sense of hopelessness that the elected leaders will have the will to fight the interests of the people, and wondering how they will get to work on time without these lines. As council members, you represent these people. You're supposed to look after them, hear their voices. I ask you today as a passenger who constantly struggles to get to school on time to listen to our needs, the needs of those who put, the trust and who put you in office to wrong us, that you guys do care. So that's why I ask you to reject the proposed service cuts of on these lines to better the service. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle Lopez.
It's not working, but I'll hold it. Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Michelle Lopez. I'm here with the Bus Riders Union. We're here to ask you to oppose MTA's proposal to cut bus service. As an organizer, I have been on buses and attended all 5 service sector public hearings and heard from passengers that they rely on the 711, 715, and 714. They have told me that now, besides having to worry how they will pay their bus fare, they have to worry how they will get to work. Students from Fairfax High School, Belmont High School, Virgil Middle School, and Roybal Learning Complex use the 714. I used to be one of those students who used to take the 14 but stopped because the 14 would always be late. And even so like that, the 714 was always overcrowded and sometimes didn't even stop. And for many, it leaves the 714 as their only alternative to get to school. So instead of claiming that rapid lines are unproductive, why not invest in resources to make rapid service much better, because minimal improvements proposed for local lines are no substitutes for rapid lines. So please reject MTA's proposal to cut bus service. Thank you.
Followed by Eric Roman.
My name is Crystal McMillan. I'm a bus rider and a member of the Bus Riders Union. The service running east to west in southeastern Los Angeles is already erratic and undependable. Cutting service, especially to lines like the 753, which has been in service less than 5 years and has never been given the vital resources that it needs, will increase wait and commute times for the community. The unemployment rate for the community of southeastern Los Angeles has been estimated at 70%. How can cutting access to employment centers help get our city back on its feet? With a fare increase already causing hardship, service cuts will only add to our burden. Please do not cut these lines. Thank you.
Hi.
So Jose Aguilar.
Eric Roman from the Bus Riders Union. I'm also a bus rider and also one of the people that went on the bus to collect over 900 signatures. So two quick points. One is the Rapid System has been one of the great success stories of the consent decree. It's greatly improved service and attracted riders. But despite that success, investment in Rapid has been insufficient and really the job isn't done. But now you're taking basically the first opportunity available to you with the expiration of Judge Terry Hatter's order on Rapid service in December of this year to undermine the decree by slashing 5 Rapid lines and cutting service on 3 others. So on top of that, we ask Directors Robinson, Rayleigh Thomas, Mayor Villaraigosa, where is the political will to ask the hard questions of your staff to identify resources that would make it possible to avoid these cuts? There's hundreds of millions of dollars coming in this into this agency and out of this agency, and yet you accept the recommendations and proposals of the staff that these cuts are necessary. So lastly, I want to say we also want to ask, why have there been no proposals to cut rail service, even though operations and maintenance costs on rail and the subsidy for rail ridership is much higher? So again, we ask you to demonstrate the political will by demanding that staff give other options to avoid these cuts. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Aguilar, who will be followed by Ivan Campaño Chavez.
Hello, my name is Jose Aguilar. I'd like to speak for the record. I'm a member of the Boyle Heights Neighborhood Council, president, member of Lincoln Heights Neighborhood Council, and member of the Austria Neighborhood Council. But I'm speaking on my own behalf, my own opinion. I would like to state for the record that the birth of 620 came out of a class action lawsuit that Ernestina Montellano was involved in with the Bus Riders Union concerning the bus line 255. 255 was taken away and 620 was provided for in replacement of 255, which is, that in itself was an outrage. Another issue that I have with the 620, that 620 was purposely sabotaged because bus stops were taken away. One of the bus stops that were taken away and eliminated was on the corner of Winter Street and Mott. That also added and contributed to lower ridership. The other issue is this, that the subway, so-called Gold Line, has less than 400 riders per day. That's a joke. Why don't you cut services there and provide for bus services?
Good afternoon. My name is Ivan Corpeño Chavez, and I'm a retired resident of Los Angeles, and I've been here for many, many years when SCRTD used to service the area. And service was bad then, but it's worse now. I live on 3rd at Wall between Los Angeles and San Pedro, and there was no bad service there. You know, like I wanted to go to the hearing a couple of days ago up on the west side. You know, the third street. That part's east, but runs like 4 blocks away through the worst part of town. Okay? Trying to get here today, I had to walk over a mile because trying to figure out how to get here was horrible. You know, after, when I retired, I wanted to go visit my alma mater, maybe go to the beach, take the bus. The other day I took the bus to my dentist on Mid-Wilshire, and it's a nightmare. You know, I haven't been able to do any of that because bus service stinks. Now, you're talking about cutting service. Talk about cutting service in the central area and all over the place. Service is bad enough. You know, you have a public trust, and that is to provide good service and decongest the city and clean the air. So please do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Received the input that has been provided to us at this meeting from the public. I'm going to ask at this time whether staff has anything they wish to add based on the input that's been received.
No, just that a lot of the similar comments did come up at the Governance Council meetings, and the Governance Council members actually went out and rode some of these services to find out firsthand, you know, what the situation is regarding ridership. And they approved all of the proposals with the modifications that I mentioned earlier on 5 of the proposals.
Questions by members of the committee.
No, I already.
Okay, Director Robinson's already talked about the 620. Director O'Connor, do you have any questions? I'm just going to offer a comment at this point. I think, you know, we've heard terms such as more productive, less productive, and I think it's difficult for those that rely on that particular service as being absolutely essential service, whether it's wherever it ranks on the scale. It's difficult to hear that type of terminology. The other side of this is from the revenue standpoint, the cost to provide the service, I think there is a feeling by staff that there are other opportunities in terms of where those resources can be put out to even serve others that may not be getting adequate service today. And certainly, it is no secret, there is a huge effort as well, as supported by the voters of this county, to expand services beyond the existing bus system that we have, adding additional rail systems. And I would hope that as we move forward and with some improvement in the economy, that we can actually augment bus operations as well as the rail construction that is going to be taking place. That having been said, we do have an obligation to live within the means that we have from operating service. I would ask that our staff, when they come forward to the board next week, that based on the comments that have been heard, a lot of comments today on the 620, Director Robinson has raised some questions on that particular line. If there are other options out there, and I know that we're talking about 5% in terms of cuts, I also know that that's not a huge amount, but that some service is being redeployed into local service. At the same time, the next 5%, it can become an endless cycle as well. There will always be a lowest 5%, whether you have twice as much service or half as much service. So that is a paramount challenge that we have, is how do we operate and run a sustainable system here. I will support these changes today. I don't really like the changes, but I think given the economic conditions that we have here, really acknowledging that many of our riders will be affected by these changes and are being affected by other changes being enacted at the state level and the federal level as well. The action is before us. Is there a motion by my colleagues on the committee?
I moved item 4 to full board. On the 620, with the change in the 620 recommended by staff.
Okay, there's a motion second to move the item to the full board with a recommendation to approve it with the concerns noted about line 620. Does that fairly represent what the motion is?
Yes.
Is there additional discussion? Are there any objections? The item is approved and will go to the full board next Thursday. Let's move to item 10. Item 10 is the staff report on distance and time-based fares. I'll ask for that report at this time.
And Dana Woodbury will provide that that report.
Thank you. Okay. Hi. Several months ago, the board provided staff with a request for a substantial amount of information about two different policy approaches to charging passengers for the use of transit service. Specifically, they wanted us to evaluate time-based and distance-based fare policies that are currently in use throughout North America. They wanted us to also consider metro fare meter and technology and the extent to which existing practice is applicable to either of these practices. They also wanted us to assess Metro's organizational structure and personnel and recommend any changes that might be needed to implement either approach, to review the literature since 2000 regarding either of these strategies and comment on what academia has said on the subject, and also present at least three models of each of the approaches for evaluation of the pros and cons of each. Basically, time-based fare collection is the payment of fare purchases time on the system. Based on current practice, the amount of time that you purchase could vary anywhere from 1 to 2.5 hours. But within that time period, unlimited transfers could occur for no additional cost. We currently have examples of time-based fares in our current fare structure in the form of daily, weekly, and monthly passes, all of which are time-based fare media. Distance-based fare collection allows you to buy distance on the system rather than time. You can either pay for a trip of a specific length, or you can buy access to a segment of the system. Metrolink is an example of purchasing a segment of the system. You pay a fare on Metrolink, you buy access to a certain segment from one station to another station. We evaluated with APTA's assistance the current fare practices of North American properties. We found that there are currently 32 of the 244 properties surveyed that use some form of time-based pricing for single trips. Most commonly, this is enforced through smart cards or magstripe media, to a lesser extent using paper transfers. We outline on the slide the number of properties that use each of the approaches and the range of time that they provide. Apart from express bus services, there are very few properties that use distance-based pricing on local bus service. Of the seven properties that currently do so, one has discontinued the practice in this month in Buffalo. Four of them have radial systems, and the distance zones are defined as circles around the CBD, and the other three establish specific areas within their service area, and the fare is a function of how many areas you travel through. For implementation, time-based pricing requires some proof of the time the trip started, and a means of providing a receipt that shows how much time is available to the rider before an additional fare would be required. With our existing technology, a tap card could provide this mechanism. A vended receipt from a fare box could also be used, but additional hardware would need to be acquired and affixed to the fare boxes. We could also issue transfers, though we discontinued that practice a number of years ago because of issues associated with managing the media. Distance-based pricing requires some sort of proof of trip origin and a validation and or added payment at the trip destination. The tap card can provide this if we required riders to tap out of the system as well as into the system. On the bus system, this would be complicated by the need to stop the bus periodically and have the operator check the validity of fares and collect additional fares when necessary. On the rail system, the gating of the system would facilitate the collection of distance-based fares. We looked at the current organizational structure, and we note on the slide here where within MTA the various fare-related responsibilities currently reside. We found no reason to alter the structure in order to implement either of the pricing approaches discussed in this report. In the literature review, we found that in the past 10 years there have only been 6 studies published, all of them related to distance-based fares, and primarily the focus was on optimizing pricing within a given distance-based structure. We've provided some examples in this particular slide, 3 examples of how we could approach time-based pricing. The first example, you would pay a base fare either with a tap card or a TVM ticket and receive unlimited transfers for up to an hour after the initial boarding. The base fare could be paid in cash, in which case no transfers would be provided. It would be pay as you board as the current system works. And passes would continue to allow unlimited boardings. The second example would similarly allow a base fare paid with a tap or a TVM ticket to provide for unlimited transfers for up to an hour. But in addition, the cash fare paying passenger would be allowed to transfer through the issuance of a receipt, which would require some sort of additional hardware to vend the time-based receipt. Again, passes would be honored as they are now. In the third approach, the payment of a regular base fare would function as it does today, you'd have to pay upon each boarding. However, with the payment of a slight premium, you would be permitted unlimited transfers within a period of time. The pros and cons are outlined for each of these. Essentially, the implementation of time-based pricing for some portion of cash riders would require a higher cash fare by virtue of the fact that a portion of riders that currently pay to board would become transfer boardings that would no longer require a fare, and that lost revenue would have to be offset through payment of a higher initial fare. Three models of distance-based pricing. The first would provide distance-based fares on rapid and express bus only, and would rely on definition of fare zones for enforcement of the appropriate payment. A second example would impose distance-based fares only on the heavy rail system, and the third example would impose it on the entire rail system, both heavy and light rail. In all cases, in the case of on the bus system, zone checks would be required. It would slow the boarding process and also slow the running time of the buses for the fare checks at fare zone boundaries. For the rail system, additional machines would be needed to handle cash fare-paying patrons who don't have a tap card or a TVM card for enforcement of the additional fare that would be required. There also might be some affordability issues and the need to run some parallel non-premium bus services. The trade-offs of the various approaches. Time-based approach to pricing. Riders pay for increments of time on the system. The more time spent on the system means added payments. Because you're paying for time, it's obviously an incentive to use the faster, higher capacity services, which from our perspective are also the most efficient for us to operate. Cash and tap purse riders would pay a higher initial base fare in order to fund the free transfers that would be provided. Implementation is possible with the current hardware and fare media that we use today. For distance-based, riders pay for increments of distance on the system. This provides less of an incentive to use the faster, higher capacity services, requiring the operator to provide a lower-priced parallel service in some cases. Also, some reprogramming of the tap cards would be required for each of the applicable modes and would require added hardware, even on the rail system, to enforce payment for cash-paying riders. This report's provided technical background for consideration of each of these approaches, and we anticipate coming back in future months and having further policy discussions on this subject, leading to ultimately policy recommendations by the board for the approach to future prices. Thank you.
Questions or comments by members of the committee?
Question.
Dr. Robinson.
I was just curious with regard to some of the concerns that we have been discussing about TAP, whether even if you came, that as part of your recommendations when you do come back, because I know you're still and it's a work in progress, but that you'd be able to address how those pieces of the puzzle will fit together in the end. Because, you know, at this point, we're having some concerns about implementing the, I would say, maybe basic TAP program, and then layering this on top of the basic TAP program. You know, I just really want to make sure the time, cost, and functionality issues are all combined into one report so that we're not piecemealing it, and that whatever we decide to take on, ultimately the board decides to take on, it understands the entire vision of what you're moving forward with in a recommendation. Because I think it's you know, I think the sell on this has to be something that makes some sense regarding cost recovery, but also implementation, considering how long it might take to get something like this implemented once we were able to convince ourselves and others that it was a good idea.
Right. I think the primary consideration is what policy approach the board wants to take towards pricing, mm-hmm. and then that will dictate what changes need to be made to the hardware and the mechanics to make it work.
Yeah, but I think even in analyzing that, I think we really need to get a full vision picture of, and if you did this, then it would take all of this in order to get there. So that so that all of those considerations, very clearly what Supervisor Molina was speaking about this morning in other reports, is that if we have a full picture, you tell the, you know, I'm always, on when I'm sitting on that side of the table, as often I am, I'm full disclosure. So, you know, that way you get it all, you can take it all, or you can ask us to modify it or whatever it is, but we get the full disclosure from that side of the table.
We'll do the best we can.
Thanks.
I want to follow up on that because I think the ability to implement is going to be key. Conceptually, what I like about distance base is, you know, to me it doesn't seem to be equitable that someone would pay the same fare to ride less than a mile as someone else might pay to ride 20-plus miles, or maybe even 20-plus miles in a faster, more expedited type of service. So in that sense, I think there would be some benefit to looking at this. Because of the implementation issues, which Director Robinson has pointed out, I kind of wondered, gee, maybe you end up looking first at the rail system, maybe also add the Orange Line and maybe the El Monte Busway, where you already have a distance-based fare, and the Harbor Transitway into that equation. And again, down the road, figuring that if you implement that type of system, maybe it takes some pressure off of the rides that are maybe half a mile to a mile. Maybe those are lower costs. So I think it's something that we need to look at. It also comes into this whole issue of having a sustainable system and being able to have a complete system. One of the ironic things, I'm not sure what to do about it with time, is there also seems to me that in the case of time, that for the same distance and the same trip, that people might actually want to pay more to be on the system for less time, mm-hmm. as opposed to the time system being mm-hmm. the more time you're on the system, the more you pay. Mm-hmm. The better service would be to spend less time and get the same trip generated. So I don't know how that all fits in. But I know we have, you know, I think this is a great start for moving us forward. These things are great ideas. The complexity of putting them into place is tremendous. We have requests from the public as well on this. I'll call forward Kimberly Richards, followed by Esperanza Martinez, followed by John Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kimberly Richards, Public and Legislative Affairs Director, Southern California Transit Advocates. I went through this entire staff report and I read every word of it. And this seems to be a case of damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you go to distance-based fares, there's more infrastructure cost at the rail stations. The gates didn't cost enough, as the Daily News pointed out. Now there has to be an add fare value machine so you can get out of the system. Premium for express bus service or faster service may incentivize higher use of local service, which is going to cost this agency more money to run than the increased express fares are going to bring in. I'm sorry to disagree with you, Director Pisana. This is not a great idea. There are pitfalls, and this staff report points them all out. And honestly, I'm going to be looking forward to the next staff report to see what pitfalls are in there. Thank you.
Thank you. Esperanza Martinez.
Good afternoon, members of the Operations Committee. Esperanza Martinez, lead organizer with the Bus Riders Union. Chair Pisana, I appreciated your comments earlier. It's good to hear that you didn't like the proposed service changes. So now what I would like to ask is, when does it all stop, though? So it's service cuts, fare increases, service cuts, fare increases. Now we have this distance and time-based fare policy being proposed that looks like just another way to creep in a set of fare increases on top of the ones that are proposed in the long-range transportation plan. So just some quick thoughts on why this sounds like a detrimental plan for bus riders in LA County. First of all, we know that bus riders, many people who use public transit don't live where they work. So people are traveling farther distances to their security posts, to their house cleaning jobs, to their service work on different ends of the county. We can't keep comparing ourselves to to New York. They cover less, less, they cover less, and they have double the bus fleet. So when you think about, you know, the proposed cuts to rapid service, you know, what are the incentives for people to actually ride MTA if, you know, these time-based fares, will actually add more costs, that people are already experiencing. So we hope that you tread forward very, very carefully and think about the people that are going to be squeezed out of the system as you, raise fares through these policies.
Study is a waste of staff time and money. Unlock gates. Now, you've seen me come up here for month after month and say the gates are unlocked, and they smirk. Finally, I got a reporter at the Daily News to do the story. Okay? Mark Littman cursed at the reporter. Troy Anderson, your staff person, cursed at him. How dare you? If I said what he said, Littman said to him, you'd ban me for 90 days. I'm telling you right now, this is all part. You know what Malcolm X said, and I want the minorities up here. He said, racism comes in many different colors. Many different colors. And I'm telling you right now, it's free. You want to use the subway, just walk on there, and it's open. 70% of the people now just spin right through and don't even tap. It's all free. Do you get it? And if I'm wrong, come on down for Sonnet and we'll count. 70% aren't even tapping.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. We are still on this item. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Walsh, your time is up. Questions by members of the committee? This is a received file report with a subsequent report expected back in a few months. Okay, we'll receive the report, and we thank you for that information. That brings us to item 11, which is to receive and file a status report of P3010, light rail vehicle procurement. Interesting number there. Staff report.
We've been working for better than a year to position ourselves to go on the street with a solicitation for a follow-on light rail vehicle to the P2550s. We were directed by the board to take one last stab at a number of issues by requesting four items in particular be reviewed by FTA and an answer provided. We don't have the final answer yet, but we do have some initial staff looks from Washington D.C. on the 4 points that we're asking the letter. Buy America, they basically are asking for more stringent Buy America requirements. They said the 60% component requirement is a floor. It could be raised to 100% as was suggested in the letter. They question whether it's achievable, but the staff position at FTA is that would be okay to legally. There was an environmental question in there, and FTA indicated they do not have the authority to make that decision. That would have to come from EPA, which would further lengthen the amount of time involved in getting an answer. DBEs, the way rolling stock DBE requirements are handled, that requirement has historically been put on the vehicle manufacturer, with the properties not having a separate goal for this, but they said it is possible to do it, although they've never actually ever used this exception. I'd ask that we provide some specific contracting information before they would address that. Staff is in the process of doing some what-if sensitivity analysis to make a judgment on that. And then local hiring, the initial answer from the FTA staff is no. As we expected, it's viewed as exclusionary and discriminatory, and they probably will end up saying no. But we did make the request as directed by the board. So this is a receive and file to position us to come back to the board next month. Hopefully we'll have enough information to make a final recommendation.
Appreciate the report. Mr. Taylor.
I just want to reiterate that that we need to move along on this procurement, so we will be coming back next month for action.
Excellent. We want to see as many of these jobs created locally. I think we definitely have some goals that we'd like to see in terms of local manufacture, but we are up against it now in terms of the timeline, so we really do need to move forward. Any other questions by the committee? We have a request from Mr. Walsh on this item to address the committee.
Does everyone have amnesia? Do you remember 6 months ago when this came before the board? Do you remember the mayor up there with the smirk saying, I got to deal with Breda. We're going to build these cars here. This place was full of people. There was only one person who said that the mayor was wrong, that it would never happen, that he was lying, that he had no deal. That was John Walsh. And John Walsh's psychotic ravings are now a subject of amnesia. El alcalde es muy arisco. I want to tell you, most of you don't speak Spanish. It doesn't mean insolent. It's a word beyond insolent that we don't even have in the English language. Because the word insolent in Spanish is insolente. We took that word. But the Spanish created a word, and that's a slave language, incidentally, on indigenous people. The Spanish took a word that's beyond insolence. First, you had this whole county, this whole America, believing that he had a contract for a factory here, and now you're back at ground zero. Psychotic ravings of John Walsh, conceptual truth, next day.
Mr. Walsh, I believe that concludes our agenda. We now have public comment. Jose Aguilar, followed by John Walsh.
I'm tired of beating you up.
Okay. Mr. Aguilar. Let's have the CEO's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Remind everyone that the bus rodeo for this year will be held on Saturday, the 25th of September. That's a week from Saturday at Santa Anita Racetrack in the San Gabriel Valley. We would like to extend the invitation to our board members and their families to join us for a great day of activities, including food and entertainment. We do have a fine group of operators and mechanics competing this year, and the competition should be very keen. The maintenance competition begins at 7 a.m. and the transportation driving event at 8, and we would be pleased and honored if you came by.
Well, I may be able to make it by. I'm just pleased it wasn't moved to Del Mar. So.
Yeah.
Any other business before the committee? We are adjourned.
Mr. Chairman?
That's all right.
Thank you.